Thank you for joining us today for the Oakwood Baptist Church podcast. This episode was recorded at the Home Builder Sunday School class, which Pastor Jones teaches at Oakwood. The lessons are taken from the book Made for Friendship by Drew Hunter.
Take your Bibles and turn to Proverbs chapter 17. Proverbs 17, and we're going to continue studying friendship, and we're going to talk about cultivating friendship here. And so Proverbs 17 and verse 17. The Bible says, "A friend loveth at all times, and a brother is born for adversity." I think that's an excellent verse. A friend loveth at all times. I think we've all known what we would call a fickle friend, right? Somebody that didn't really love at all times. I mean, they were kind of there, in and out, when something better came along. The Bible says a true friend loveth at all times, and a brother is born for adversity. I want to give you just kind of a principle based on the thought of that verse. Here's a myth about friendship. The myth about friendship is that it just happens. You know, you just sit down at a Sunday school table with somebody and say how you're doing, and the next thing you know, you're best friends. You know, that's a myth. It doesn't happen. Friendship is like a garden. It requires cultivation. And the truth of the matter is if we use the garden illustration, without cultivation, friendships either wither or they become unruly. I think we've all seen a garden that wasn't really tended to, and it's just grown over with weeds or just kind of a mess, or it didn't get water and supply, and so it's just everything in it is dead. And friendship can be that way. I want to give you this morning, we're going to jump right into it. I got a lot of content. I want to give you three ways to cultivate better friendships. A lot of this is very practical. Three ways to cultivate better friendships. Number one, true friendships take wisdom. True friendships take wisdom. There are a lot of ways that we could define wisdom. I mean, give me some definition of how you would define wisdom. I mean, there's one that I throw out there all the time, but how would you define wisdom? Stephen?
Thinking like God.
Thinking like God? That's a good definition. I like that one. What's another one? Stephen?
Applying understanding to your life.
I think that's a very good, a lot of people define it that way, you know, applying truth. I would say that in the Proverbs it talks about knowledge, understanding, and wisdom. Those things are related, but they're not entirely the same, so I think that's an excellent definition. I think if you want to be really, really simple, you could just say wisdom is making good decisions. I mean, I know you guys are a little groggy today, but I mean, how many of you know somebody like you love them, you really love them, but they just can't seem to ever make a good decision? How many know somebody like that? Like, I know some people that it's like they never make good decisions. It's like if they got two choices in front of them, they're totally picking the worst one. And you're like, man, some of you guys are looking around today. I hope you're not looking at it like, that's you. No. But maybe you're thinking of somebody that you know. And I think that's true. I always say it's, you know, doing the right thing at the right time in the right way for the right reason. That's a definition I like to use. But here's some that I put down on paper. The application of knowledge. It's kind of what Stephen was saying. Making good decisions. I just mentioned doing the right thing at the right time in the right way for the right reason. Stephen, I like that. Thinking like God, because certainly that would be true. So wisdom, true friendship requires wisdom. So God made different relationships to work in different ways. Okay? So for example, we have a relationship with God. Aren't you thankful for that? That's what happens when you get saved, right? You had a broken relationship with God. You get saved, you're reconciled to God, and now you have a relationship with Him. But we have to be careful that we don't abuse that relationship. We have to treat it properly. And so that relationship works differently than other relationships. For example, listen, we can't make a God out of our spouse. We can't make a God out of our children. Listen, some people, you know, we always say, oh, I just adore my wife. I worship the ground she walks on. Or I adore my husband. I worship the ground he... Or hey, I've watched people, they make their child a center of worship. That everything is about their child. What their child wants, they don't say no. Their focus and attention is completely on that child, exclusively. Listen, you cannot make a God out of somebody who is not God. And by the way, you can't treat God like he's your buddy. And quite frankly, man, a lot of Western Christianity has lost all awe and respect and seriousness when it comes to God. I mean, I don't know about you, but I get tired. I mean, it's going to pop out in my preaching a little bit. I get tired of these church. I mean, we see videos of some pastor come swinging into a service on a wrecking ball like he's Miley Cyrus, or some pastor's wife punting and kicking the Bible. I mean, this is ridiculous. It's ridiculous. And I don't know why people who call themselves Christians go to this stuff. Where is the awe and the respect? Listen, God's house is not to be treated like it's a stadium. God's house is not to be treated like it's a bar or an entertainment venue. It's ridiculous. And where does that come from? Because people are treating God like he's one of the dudes. And he's not. He's God Almighty. You know? I'm sorry. Just a little preachy popped out. I apologize. No, I don't. But anyway. All right. Listen, we have a marriage relationship. And listen, the marriage relationship is different than any other relationship. You can't treat it like, you know, again, it has aspects to it that are different than your fishing buddy. It has aspects that are different than your children. You know, and the parent relationship has different, pastor relationship, work relationship. So again, God made different relationships to work in different ways. So let's talk about friendship. It takes wisdom. We got to think about what this relationship is and apply this knowledge to it. All right, so how about this? Here's a thought. Let me explain it. Give your friends a promotion. What I mean by that is, a lot of times you might be too busy for your friends, but that doesn't mean that you should be. Okay, and again, you know, this is the pot calling the kettle black in some ways. Life is busy, is very busy. And we can be guilty sometimes of making life too busy. And what ends up happening is our life may seem busy, but if we can promote our friends in our priorities, we will find time for them in our schedules, and that's necessary if we're going to develop and cultivate better friendships. Okay? How about this? Take a dose of realism. Here's another practical thought. Take a dose of realism. Here's another myth about friendship, that we can have a lot of close friends. I've warned you about this. Look, you might have 922 Instagram followers, but that's not like all your friends. I kind of joke around and say it's electronic voyeurism. It's people spying on your life. I mean, that's what it is. Friendships take time, and if they take time, you only have so much of it. We all only have 24 hours in one day. And if you only have so much of it, you only have so much to share with people. You can't share it with everyone. Think of it this way. Thanksgiving is awesome. I like Thanksgiving. I think we need to protect the sanctity of Thanksgiving. Yeah, I'm looking at you, Sarah Shank. You celebrate Thanksgiving, then you start celebrating Christmas. Let Thanksgiving have its place. Thanksgiving is awesome. And when you come to Thanksgiving, you think about it, it's awesome, but you can only fit so much on one plate. Now, if you're like me, I'm a little quirky in some ways. We all are, but one of my quirks is I don't like my food touching my other food. Like you have it here and here and here and here, and I like it that way. How many are with me on that? Look, I knew I wasn't alone, but how many are like, I know there are a lot of people like, so what? It's all going in the same place anyway. No, there is a so what. Anyway. And so some of you, I mean, Thanksgiving, I mean, it's like you're trying, but I don't care if you don't mind mixing your food, touching your food, if you don't mind, you still can only fit so much on one plate. You can only put so much. And the same is true with our relationships. If we try to collect too many close friends, we end up with no close friends at all. Here's an English proverb, a friend to all is friend to none. And I think that there's some truth to that. I really do. Here's another thought to talk about using wisdom. Like I got to promote this in my priorities. I've got to be realistic about how many deep relationships I can have. And here's the last one, realign your expectations. What happens when you consider someone your close friend and they don't consider you that way? You ever had that? You ever had that? You're like, man, that's my best friend. And they're like, I don't tolerate that guy. You know, what happens in that situation? Well, you have to adjust your expectations. And by the way, I mentioned this last week. You have to understand that friendships do change over time. It's rare that a friendship will last a lifetime. I mean, I mentioned to you, if you think of your three closest friends in fourth grade, I know it's possible, but I doubt it's very probable or likely that your best friend in the world today is still was your best friend in fourth grade. It's extremely rare. They change lanes over time, and you have to sometimes realign your expectations on that. Okay? So, true friendships take wisdom. We have to understand the nature of the relationship and exercise some wisdom in it. So, number two, true friendships take work. Now, again, friendship can often begin without much effort, but don't miss this. It will not endure without much effort. Okay? It might begin without a lot of effort. You know, again, you might sit down at a table by chance and strike up and say, hey, I really like it. But listen, it's not going to endure without some intentional effort. Think about it. Listen, you know that I've said to you, some of you guys invite me to these 5K runs or whatever you're doing. No, I'm not doing it. You can invite somebody else, all right? If I'm running, somebody's chasing me. Something's wrong. It's bad. If I'm running, you should start running too, you know? So that's just how I feel. But listen, I'm going to tell you right now, I could start a marathon. I mean, anybody in this room could start a marathon. Starting a marathon's not hard. That's it. Finishing it is really hard. I mean, if you're going to run 26.2 miles, that's not easy. You say, how do you know? I just heard. Because I've never tried to finish one of those. I mean, I can only imagine what that does to your feet, what that does to your knees, what that does to your lungs. That's pretty intense. Anybody can start a friendship. It takes time to finish in that. You know, it takes work. Here's some things that we're going to have to make some effort, some work in. Number one, talking face-to-face. I want you to think about the varying ways we communicate and how some forms are better than others. Listen, digital messages are fine. They're great. I mean, how many of you are like me? You're old enough to remember when you had to pay for texting. Remember when it was like 10 cents a text? Like, man, I never texted. Like, no, I'm not paying for that. But man, I mean, when you got unlimited texting, it's a great way to communicate. It really is. For informational purposes, for short little quips and jokes. But again, can I help everybody out here? Do not resort to conflict resolution through texting if you can help it at all. That is not the best thing to do. All right? Again, I think you should think primarily information, encouragement, ha ha ha, check this video out. That's a little bit what you want to use that for. How about email? I mean, again, email is great, and there's, I think you almost want to put that in the texting category. Phone calls, I think it's funny that we use our phone for just about everything except for calling people. Is anybody like this? There's just something about you don't want to call somebody. How many feel that way? I know there's a lot of people that feel that way. It's like, you know what kind of cracks me up sometimes is people text you and say, hey, can I call you? And I'm always like, just call. Like, if you can't, you can leave a message. But there's an aversion to actually calling somebody. But you know, there's a good, listen, I think phone calls are a little bit better than emails and texts. Why? Because at least you can still hear the tone of the person's voice. You can't see their face, can you? But you can hear what they're saying, and then you can, because we've all gotten a text and gone, what does that mean? I'll give you an example. Every Sunday morning I try to text some preachers and let them know I'm praying for them, thinking about them, And today, the varying answers are interesting. You know, a lot of times it's, hey, I really appreciate that. I'm praying for your services too. Or, hey, that means a lot to me. Hope you're doing well. Or, God bless you, buddy. Something like that. Today, I texted a guy. He said, thanks. The T wasn't capitalized. There was no period. There was no explanation point. There was no emoji. It just said, thanks. What does that mean? I thought we were friends. Were you busy? Were you in the middle of something? Did I do something to bother you? Is it me? You know, like, text, you can't tell tone. You can't, at least a phone call, you can hear what the guy's saying. If you say, well, let me get this straight. Is this how you, oh, no, that's not what I meant. You can work something out. It's another level, right? But then there's face-to-face. I mean, face-to-face, you can see the facial expression. You can hear the tone. Look, you've got to understand the ways we communicate. In fact, 2 John chapter 1 and verse 12 says, having many things, this is what Paul's, or John said, having many things to write unto you, I would not write with paper and ink, but I trust to come unto you and speak face to face that our joy may be full. Listen, there was a lot of things that were done in letters, and it was a great way to communicate in that day. But he said, listen, I got so much I want to say to you and so much I want to communicate to you that I want to come to you face to face. See, talking openly is more important than talking often. See, we're all like a lake. We have shallow parts, we have deep ends. And sometimes having that deep conversation is what cultivates a friendship. True friendships take work. Now, understand, conversations are draining. They can really be draining, especially depending on your personality. Some of you are introverts, some of you are extroverts. Again, I tell you, I don't think an introvert is somebody who's backward and shy necessarily. I think if you study it, an introvert is just somebody that people kind of take it out of them and they need to recharge in order to get around people again. And now there's a lot of us like that in this room. There are other people that are extroverts. It's like the more people that are going to be at a place, the better it is, and they just get fired up about it and they love being around it. And those are two different kind of personality types, right? But conversations can be draining. I'm more introverted. I know people see you in the pulpit and they have this kind of, it's not that I don't like people, and it's not that, I like people a lot. I mean, if you're a pastor and don't like people, that could be a real problem, all right? And I think people see, it's not that I'm shy, I'm not afraid to talk to anybody. But again, I just, after a while, it does kind of pull that out of me. And I think I go and travel, like I've had some people say when you go and travel, like, hey, I hope you enjoy your time off. What are you talking about? I don't think you understand it. Most of the time, my flight's leaving at 5 in the morning. Travel is just brutal. I was in an airport all day yesterday. It was just horrible, honestly. I kept thinking, why do I do this? I'm going to start telling people no. But anyway, when you get to someplace, you're talking. The pastor wants to talk to you. And they're talking and talking and talking and talking. And then you go to church. Like, I'm not home in the evening. I'm in church all night. And then you're talking to people that you'll probably never see again and talking and talking and talking and talking. I finally get home and it's like, And then Mindy wants me to call her and talk to her. You know, I mean, it's like, man, it pulls it out of you. Conversation can be very draining. And it can certainly be draining when, think about this, what if one person is too dominant? You ever talk to somebody and all they do is talk and they don't listen? Or you start talking and it's like they didn't hear anything you said, even though your mouth was moving and words were coming out. It can also be draining if somebody's too passive. What if somebody is always listening but they never contribute anything? I mean, that's frustrating too, isn't it? See, if you only share details about your life, you're not going to have deep relationships with somebody. Again, sitting in an airport. I have my earbuds in, but maybe I have ADHD. I don't know. Like, I think some of that's whatever. But I'm the kind of person, like, if I'm reading a book and you start talking, it will distract me. I will, like, listen to what you're saying, even though I don't know you and don't care what you're saying. It's hard for me. So classical music going on in here so I can actually read. But there are some people that have no volume control whatsoever. And there was a guy in the terminal yesterday, I was sitting in Dallas, and this guy thought the whole terminal should hear his stories. And it was aggravating me. I honestly, shut up, dude. I just didn't have the guts. But somebody needed to say it. But this guy talking nonstop about himself to complete strangers. Nonstop. Yeah, blah, blah, blah. Like, one thing that stuck out in my mind is he's like, yeah, you know, I do this and I do that. And my wife said I'm going to be in a wheelchair when I'm 80. And I told her, you know, if I'm not in a wheelchair when I'm 80, I'd be disappointed because that means I didn't live life to the fullest. I'm like, shut up. Shut up. Somebody that only talks about themselves is not going to have deep friendships. And if you never, but on the flip side, if you never reveal anything about your life, how can you have a deep friendship with somebody either? Engaged listening and measured speaking are required. Listen, if you have the tendency to be a talker, and some of us do, if at times you're not saying to yourself, am I talking too much? Am I talking too much? Maybe I need to pull this back. Then I don't think you get it. You need to get a little bit of a clue. If you are a very quiet person, and some of you are, and you don't every once in a while saying, hey, what are some questions that I can ask? How can I stimulate this conversation? You need to work on that if you want good friendships. Because if when people engage you and all you say is, fine, you're not going to have much of a relationship and you can't complain about not having friends. Y'all tracking with me this morning? All right. Here's another thing. Doing things side by side. Friendships feed on shared experiences. We talked about that. It's not complicated. Friends do things together. Sometimes just being together is more important than whatever it is that you're doing. So you just get together and you do something. Share. That's why, listen, I hope you guys understand. I put a plug in again for our youth activities. Brother Corey doesn't organize these activities because he's bored on Saturdays. Brother Corey is not sitting around going, you know what I'd like to do? Man, I'm just bored and I would love to hang out with seventh graders. Hanging out with seventh graders is awesome. They smell great. Their conversation is so stimulating and interesting. That's what I want to do this evening on Friday night. You know, that's not why we have youth activities. We have youth activities so that godly kids from godly homes can get together and share experiences and get together. Because when you share experiences, it creates camaraderie, which creates relationship and friendship. How about eating together? Friendships thrive when we eat together. There's no doubt about it. There's much we could say about that. Encouragement. I like this quote. Somebody said this. Encouragement is relational oxygen. Encouragement is relational oxygen. We need it. It's kind of the lifeblood. So let me challenge you with this. Whenever the thought crosses your mind to affirm something about someone, do it. And do it without hesitation. Take that phone that's always in your pocket and fire off a text. I just happened to be looking over at Joey just a second ago. I mean, on Wednesday night after church was over, about 9:30 or 9:45 at night, text me, hey, I appreciate that message. Told me something that spoke to his heart about it. And what do you appreciate about our church and our ministry? That means a lot to me. I really appreciate that. I'm trying to do that myself. Like, whenever I think of somebody, just, hey, I'm going to fire off this text. If I see somebody, whatever, if it comes to your mind to affirm something about someone, do it. Do it without hesitation. All right, I got like 5 minutes. Here's the last thought. True friendships take weeding. Just as prickly weeds cover the ground, relational weeds will infest our relationships. I wish I'd had more time here, but anyway, here's a couple of thoughts about weeding because I wish I would have been able to give more to this. Beware of being inconsiderate. Beware of being inconsiderate. Proverbs 25:20 compares, this is a, verse. You got your Bible open? Let's just look at it real quick. 25:20. It says, as he that taketh away a garment in cold weather and is a vinegar upon nitre, so is he that singeth songs to a heavy heart. So basically saying, comparing singing songs to a heavy heart is like taking somebody's coat when it's cold. You know, like, I think the idea here is, I'm getting ahead of myself, is like, don't be inconsiderate of other people. Think about somebody else besides yourself. Proverbs 27:14, should be just about a page over. 27:14, he that blesseth his friend with a loud voice rising early in the morning, it shall be counted a curse to him. Come on, if you were in a college dormitory and you had some guy, or maybe some of you in the military, they're up at the crack of dawn and boy, they're singing all loud and slamming, like, man, you want to hurt somebody when that happens. What are they doing? They're being inconsiderate. They're being inconsiderate. They're not the actions of a bully. They're just thoughtless missteps of an inconsiderate friend. And those are weeds in a relationship. They're irritations that cause problems over time. You know, recently I said something to somebody. I felt like I needed to. And I said, hey, listen, you can't do that. That's rude. And they said, I didn't mean to be rude. I said, well, it didn't matter what you meant. What you did was rude. And when you act inconsiderate, That takes a toll on relationships over time. Also, avoid causing friendship fatigue. Proverbs 25:17 says this, withdraw thy foot from thy neighbor's house, lest he be weary of thee and so hate thee. You understand? It's your responsibility to make sure you're not overstaying your welcome. You know, the college kids go over to Ezra Green's house all the time, and man, He is an extrovert, right? And he says, hey, come on in. Hey. I've told my kids, hey, I've texted them, you need to come home. And it's not because I'm trying to mother them. And like, I know they're young adults and I don't have a problem staying out later and whatever. But the thing is don't overstay your welcome. It's your responsibility to say, I need to go now. It's not the host going, please, go home. And I'd rather people say, oh, why are they leaving so early, than them going, when are they ever going to leave? Right? That's what the Bible is saying here. Be considerate. Be considerate. How about this? Don't provoke people to anger. How do we do that? Through thoughtless criticisms, passive-aggressive responses, sarcastic remarks. A lot that could be said there. Avoid gossip. If we mainly think about the weeds that others need to pull up in their life and not our own, our friendships are not going to flourish. The tendency to think about how they have failed us rather than how we have failed them is self-centered, and that produces weeds. If we need our friends to be perfect friends, then we will become terrible friends. So my conclusion is just simply this. In the end, the best advice I can give you for cultivating friendship is not to find a better friend, but to be a better friend. And I think we know that.